You're outside the White House where Donald Trump is about to speak. It's getting a bit tense.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. We've just had to run about a block as police moved in. We've been fired at with rubber bullets. My cameraman has been hit. We've also seen tear gas being used. Here we go. They're moving through again. This is exactly what it looks like. Exactly what it looks like. We're just staying safely.
Oh.
Whoa. Oh.
Amelia, can you hear us?
Amelia, are you okay? Or your cameraman? Hello, Amelia. The police just charged at Amelia and our 7 News cameraman there, and looks like
So I grew up in Australia, and I've lived in the UK and Belgium for many years before becoming a reporter here in the US. And my parents woke up to the equivalent of Good Morning America doing a live cross to the protests, which were, for all intents and purposes, peaceful outside the White House on Monday night. And there were Australian journalists on the scene doing a live cross. They were hit with rubber bullets. One of them was then punched by the police while he was filming and the camera dropped to the ground. Then tear gas filled the screen. And this is all happening on a program where you don't tend to get heavy politics. It's the hosts are a bit like Ellen DeGeneres rather than George Stephanopoulos.
Looks like a policeman just punched our cameraman.
Which is interesting because they're not discriminating between protesters and the media here. Amelia, can you hear us yet?
And it's really a jarring scene for a lot of Australians who have a cultural affinity with the US. I think it seems like a very profoundly sad moment to watch something like that over your breakfast.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch, and today, as protests over the death of George Floyd and clashes with law enforcement continue across the U.S., senior editor Ryan Heath and foreign affairs reporter Nahal Tusi on how the world is watching. Ryan, how would you say the world at large, other countries watching the protests and our responses to them, are receiving what's been happening in the U.S.?
I mean, I think it depends a little bit on what information you have access to. Let's not forget that a lot of news outlets or platforms like Facebook aren't available in all countries. So not everybody has the same experience. But I think that a lot of people either looked up to the US in a moral sense or looked to the US for protection. And I think a lot of people watching these scenes will now question whether the US can provide that leadership in the world. A lot of authoritarian governments that might not be treating their own people so well will use examples from the US to potentially harm or oppress people in a lot of those countries. I think one other aspect of this that is a bit frightening and unusual to a lot of people outside of America is the militarization of the response to the protests. Like, that is something that you typically only see in military dictatorships. It's very uncommon that you would see something like that, or local police forces so heavily armed in other countries. So it just means there's less common ground for people to meet on, because you're kind of jaw is on the ground watching this in a lot of other countries.
Nahal, how does what other countries are seeing right now match up with America's own messaging, both historically and right now, to other countries?
Well, let's just say that basically it's really giving a lot of countries, especially adversaries of the U.S., a keen way to point to what they say is longstanding U.S. hypocrisy. There's always been a history of the U.S. making this claim that it stands for human rights and democracy and liberty. And with every administration, there's been a certain level of wanting that for certain countries and then not saying that you want that for certain other countries that you feel are more, important to U.S. interests. So, for instance, you know, we have long bashed Iran for human rights, but we haven't done it as much for Saudi Arabia. But under the Trump administration, this has kind of been changing ever since the president took office. Like, he and his people made it very clear they're going to use issues like human rights and democracy against countries that they just don't like China, like Venezuela, like Iran. Yet now, given everything that's violence happen when you have this kind of unrest unfolding on U.S. soil, police brutality, that sort of thing. Those countries are saying, hey, not only are you not holding us all to the same standard overseas, you're not even meeting that standard on your own soil. And so this is giving, you know, these adversaries very much a cudgel to hit America with.
You're deeply sourced within the State Department among American diplomats. What's next here? Like, what are the people whose job it is to be keeping these relationships, working with other countries? What are they worried about here?
Well, you know, it's a really, really weird time right now to be a U.S. diplomat. I mean, you're facing all these sorts of questions about what's happening in the U.S. And, you know, one of the questions that I've been asking is, if the U.S. was a foreign country, how would you as an American diplomat be reacting? And one of the things that the people I've talked to are telling me are, well, you know, we would be talking about the stability of the government. We would be looking at possibly issuing travel warnings. We would be thinking about evacuation plans. You know, Ryan brought this up about this militarization of the response. One former U.S. diplomat was telling me that the minute that a foreign government unleashes its military on its population, that's considered a tripwire in the U.S. playbook on how to react to something. That's one of those things where they're like, uh-oh, we need to up our response. And so, yeah, I mean, they're kind of looking at this and it kind of hurts in a lot of ways because America is home for these diplomats. And so it's hard to point to what's happening here and say, hey, look, learn from us. But then there are others who point out, look, if we do grow, come out of this stronger and more unified somehow, we can look at other countries and say, hey, look, yeah, we have our problems. We're not perfect, but we have a better system. People are held accountable. We learn from our mistakes and we put in better structures that serve everyone in a better fashion. And you can learn from us.
As things stand right now, though, I mean, other countries are watching chaos within the U.S. We've pulled out of some global organizations. We're turning inwards more. I'm curious what both of you think of this, and I'll put it to you first, Ryan. What do you think the situation we're in right now could mean in the long term for America's status on the world stage?
I think the other thing that is really important to remember is that as terrible as some of these scenes have been, television in particular tends to represent an extreme view of a society. And so in the same way that looking outwards from America, you sometimes only see these terrible one-off events and incidents every few months in a given country, it doesn't really give you a true picture of what's going on in that society. So I think that over time, people will come to remember or see more of the nuance in America, that it's possible that different things can be true at the same time. And I've had that struggle this week, trying to explain to my parents that, yes, there are looting protests and big, potentially scary protests happening half a mile from my house. But two blocks on the other side of my house is a socially distanced block party happening. And it's on the theme of love wins. And both of those things are America at this moment. And so I think more of that nuance will come back out when the heat of the protests has gone. But if nothing is done about the fundamental reason behind the protest, which is the racial injustice that occurs often in this country, then, you know, some of that will never get resolved. I think over the longer term, it means that America is going to have to fight harder to demonstrate why it deserves the respect or the status as a global leader. I think that's something that is particularly true of this digital era, as we can see more and more of the complex, messy reality of life and the people who lead us. They have to work harder to earn trust and respect. And that is true of a country as it is of an individual or as it is of a political party or a social media platform, whatever it is that is the powerful force. They have more responsibility and they have to work harder to earn our respect and trust. And I think that will be true of America going forward as well.
Nihal, where do you think this leaves us in the long term?
I think a lot is going to depend on what happens in the election this November. You know, there is a sense that something has fundamentally changed in America, that no matter who wins, this is a different country than before. It's perhaps a bit more inward looking, perhaps a bit less willing to take the lead on everything in the global scheme. But if Joe Biden wins, I think there's going to be much more a sense of hope that the United States will at least work well with its allies. Whereas if Trump wins again, I think a lot of allies are going to do everything they can to hedge their bets and strengthen themselves and find other partnerships that don't necessarily rely on the U.S. because Trump has been tough on our allies, just as he's been tough on our adversaries. So a great deal is riding on this election. And I will say that, you know, I have some foreign diplomats who are telling me that I just spoke to one and I said, do you think Trump will step down if he loses the election? And he said, I don't know. I just don't know.
Nihal Tusi, Ryan Heath, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
Also today, Congressman Steve King will leave Congress after this year, after losing his bid for a 10th term last night in a fierce primary battle. It marks the end of a nearly two-decade-long career for the Iowa Republican that included numerous racist and anti-immigrant comments. Voters in his GOP district awarded State Senator Randy Feenstra the party nomination. His win is a boon to leaders in both parties, including Republicans who had stripped King of his committee assignments in Congress last year and felt his offensive rhetoric cast a shadow on the party. It also boosts the GOP's chances of keeping the seat in the House, even though Trump won the district by nearly 30 points in 2016. King barely beat his 2018 Democratic opponent, J.D. Scholten, who is running again. And President Trump says the Republican Party is going to look for another state instead of North Carolina to hold its convention in August. The announcement comes after a standoff with the state's Democratic governor, Roy Cooper, over how the event, which would draw tens of thousands of people, could be held safely in the state. On Tuesday, Cooper rejected a Republican plan for a full-fledged convention in Charlotte, telling GOP leaders the only way the event would move forward is with proper health protocols like fewer people, social distancing, and face coverings. Hours later, President Trump tweeted, "Would have showcased beautiful North Carolina to the world, but because of Governor Cooper, quote, we are now forced to seek another state to host the 2020 Republican National Convention." Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, check out some of our other shows like Pulse Check, Nerdcast, Women Rule, and Politico Energy. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.